You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
The one you came to see, ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Miss Judy Gold.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Kill Me Now. I'm Judy Gold. Hi, Patrick.
That's Brian.
Oh, Brian. Oh, you know why I called you Patrick? Because Sharon, my ex's nephew, has red hair and a red beard. And I thought, oh, he looks like Patrick, and Patrick came out of my mouth. So you're now Patrick.
Patrick
from the
rest is
of the
also
show.
The name of our producer.
Oh, so that could have been a double whammy.
Yeah,
double whammy. But I was thinking of Patrick, Sharon's nephew. That was who just spoke for the last time on the podcast, Lauren Hennehy. And I'm so excited about our guest.
Well, I'm excited too.
No, I'm more excited.
I don't know about that.
You know, we worked together like 20 something years ago.
It was 17 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, 16 and a half. Yeah.
And then we worked together again like 3 years ago.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we did.
Yeah.
And also we were at the same, we were like part of the PTA together.
Yeah, I mean, that's right.
Not officially.
Right, you don't get do
our
a
own
fucking thing.
Yeah, I did not, but
ladies and gentlemen, the
side PTA.
Incredible writer, actor, producer, director,
voiceover star.
I am not finished.
I was just helping you.
Voiceover star.
This is uncomfortable.
The host of the Majority Report. The incredible Sam Seder is here, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
It's supposed to be Seder, but he didn't want to be too Jewish.
No, that's right.
Did they change it from Seder to Seder?
I'm trying to pass.
yeah, you really can
yeah,
pass.
Yeah, no. It's a long process. It used to be Sidersky.
Really?
My understanding is like around the turn of the century, I think like a great-great-grandfather or somebody needed to get insurance for like a Shmata factory or something. I don't know. I'm making this up. But I think they couldn't get insurance, so they dropped the SKY.
Oh, that's so great. And so I'm so glad that racism and anti-Semitism and homophobia has completely been eradicated since then.
Well, that was the 1900s. I've found living in Brooklyn, operating in New York, and, you know, being involved in show business, I've done okay as a Jew.
Right.
You know, I don't run into too many obstacles.
The boy Jews don't run into obstacles.
I mean, for me, it's been basically a cakewalk.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, honestly.
Shut the fuck up. So, Sam Seder was born in New York City. Oh, I didn't turn off my fucking thing. And it's Henry.
Oh, Jesus.
Everyone turn on for phones.
Great. Good job.
Phones here. Off. Ready?
Children.
Here's Henry. Ready? We're just going to have Henry on FaceTime.
Nice.
Watch.
I don't think I've seen him in ages. Oh,
Henry,
my God.
I'm doing my podcast with Sam Seder.
Put some clothes on, for God's sakes.
He looks like a model.
What's going
on? That's Sam.
You just waking up?
What up, brother?
Lauren.
Good morning.
And Brian Patrick. Oh, good.
Are you on the West Coast?
No,
like,
he's
are
in
you
Indiana.
In Hawaii or something?
What's with the no shirt on?
I just went down
to Oh, so you smell?
Well, I just took my shirt off.
Oh, what's going on? I gotta go.
What time does this guy sleep till?
What time did you get up this morning?
I rolled out of bed at 9:40.
Not bad.
Pledge drive me to class at 10, and then I
nice.
Pledge pick me up, and I've been sleeping since 11.
God, I'm so Jesus proud of God. You. How's that job working out?
I need a pledge.
Yeah.
Can you send some of your pledges here?
I wish my kids would sleep.
Are you stoned right now?
No, I'm just tired.
All right. All right, I'll call you after.
Yeah, you don't want to.
Bye, I love you.
You don't want to get high in the middle of your nap.
All right, bye.
You do that before.
Right. You don't want to interrupt your nap by getting high.
No, no.
That was Henry calling from bed.
Wow.
Looking like a Gap model.
Yeah, Jesus.
He is really
Christ.
Handsome.
Last time I saw him, he was like a kid.
No, that was Ben, I think.
No, I mean, even
We did see you at the diner.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, Sam, I have a lot of things I want to talk to you about.
So I'm glad.
I do want to say that when we worked together on the E-Trade.
That's right.
You and I were picked out of maybe a dozen people.
There was a bunch.
Yeah.
It was the whole process from start to finish was extremely awkward.
Right.
And, largely unsuccessful.
Right.
What was this?
The E-Trade baby?
Yeah.
So this guy was the liaison between the advertising agency and E-Trade. It was the greatest job in the world because all he did really was tell us, have these ideas, and he loved. Like, the E-Trade baby to him was,
he thought it was like, he would say stuff like, this could get the coveted Super Bowl spot, and look at us, like Judy and I were just like, is this going to mean that we get paid more money?
Right.
Like, that's the only thing that we cared about was like, I had no idea why I was there.
Right.
It was completely like a sort of a fluke.
Right.
And we just kept looking at each other like, what's going to make us get more money? And he was talking about this stuff like, there's an art to this, and there's like this entire
hobby. And then Pete Holmes is Einstein. I love Pete Holmes, but he was like,
he's the baby. Okay.
There would be no baby without what he does with these words.
So Pete Holmes is the baby's voice.
Right.
And you guys were writing for the baby.
Audition. First of all, we had to write, or we went into a meeting, and he picked two of us.
There was a lot of good writers.
Yeah.
But the weird part about it was that this was all part of some other, like, political, like, advertising move where he was doing an end run around the advertising agency. And we were just sort of like, we would get these cryptic phone calls from different people involved in this process. Like, are you guys okay? Because the shit's really going down. And what are you talking about?
I just want my check.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
fighting.
It was very strange.
Because I guess they were going to fire the agency, or he wanted to be instead of using the agency, wanted to hire us.
Yeah, he kept talking about like,
and be like the savior.
The agency set up the meeting of all the writers, and then he decides, I'll get the writers and we'll fire the agency.
Wait, and then he was saying like, what we're about to do
beyond.
Could change the paradigm.
Yeah, he said paradigm.
Oh my God.
I hate the word paradigm. He said paradigm a lot.
And
that made you hate the word paradigm?
Yeah, he wouldn't stop.
This is going to be bigger than the Ally McBeal baby.
He wanted us to be rivals, but I went up to Sam. I go, no, we're in this together.
Oh, right. Like, the entire thing like was just basically like, how can we extract more money out of this process? That was the only thing.
And he wanted you to compete for
it? Well, he was like, you know, whoever's is better. And then I was just like, Sam, let's just do it together.
Right.
Like,
I mean, and which was perfect for me because, frankly, Judy's were better.
Oh, stop.
Judy's were much better.
She's a genius.
I had the one with the high poles.
I had an entire sub apparatus below Judy and I. So, like, there was just like a series of hierarchies, and I had a whole team of writers where we would conspire to create a new paradigm of the new paradigm.
Right. God. And meanwhile, you're all just lost in the matrix and nothing's really happening.
I had the baby walking over hot coals. and his mantra, so he wouldn't burn his feet, was whatever the E-Trade mantra was. It was like, I don't know. They had a new fucking whatever. I don't know. We did a whole bunch. Yeah.
So nothing ever came of this at all?
Well, we did they did a little run. He would change everything and make it not funny.
Okay.
But
they did a dry run, and then all of a sudden it all blew up.
Speaking of a dry run, God damn it. Go ahead.
Good night, folks.
Then all of a sudden, like one day, it was just like, oh, yeah, no, it all fell apart, and I'm fired, and you guys are gone.
Yeah, he goes, listen, I got fired. So we're like, fuck.
Right. Wow, damn. I know. The world was going
to
change.
But it was it never felt 100% comfortable.
No.
Oh, my God.
It sounds like no one was on the up and up.
Because they were sneaking us into offices.
Yeah, come in this office. don't walk
and
by
I
them.
And I also think there was actually a significant amount of alcohol involved in the mix, if I remember correctly.
Really?
No.
I feel like at all times a day.
Really?
Yeah. I think that was at one point I think I observed something to that effect.
In an advertising agency?
I can't remember exactly what.
I don't know. Have you seen Mad Men?
The liaison
That's what I was saying.
There was some, I mean, I you know, like if I had
You know
had
what
more
I remember
time,
the
I would
most
have been
about
drinking.
That period what? Of time? Your misery that you were having another child.
I was a little bit concerned that another child was on the way.
Premortem.
I mean, that's, I mean, I don't want to blow it out of proportion, but yes, that's accurate.
So have you recovered from the initial shock of having two children?
Well, I, you know, my son is much easier than the first. My second child, much easier than the second one.
Same.
The first one. And so,
I mean, Henry, I love you, but you're not as easy as Ben.
Right. And, you know, I love my daughter, Mila, but difficult. She was difficult as a child up until really about, I don't know, like 2 weeks ago.
And how old is she now?
She's 10.
You just fucking wait. But then they love their father. So, like, I think you're done.
I
think because
so.
They love the they fucking start hating. She's going to start hating your wife.
I mean, she's been sort of, you know, she's
who do you think hates
this.
Your wife more?
Please
you?
Don't project.
Me or my daughter?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, we have meetings about it. And we sort of like we're creating a new paradigm.
Right.
Yeah.
And paradigm. And today's word is.
We create a new paradigm. And no, you know, it's
don't
been.
Forget that silent
I haven't. Sleep is an issue. Like, I had to. You know, because based
well, but
on...
sleep is the worst. And they just had an article out, was it yesterday, about that new parents lose 6 months of sleep a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
I believe it.
I remember, this is what I remember. You know that, remember when you used to fucking do these gigs and you, I remember I'd go to Boston, and we'll talk about Boston because that's where you started. Mm. But I would do three shows at Nick's, right? And then I drive home because I didn't want to stay in that fucking condo.
Oh,
you remember?
Well, I never was in the condo.
You didn't
have to. There.
Yeah. So and I wanted to be in my own bed. So I'd leave at like 1 a.m. and drive home from Boston. And that feeling of, you know, trying to stay awake and it's 24 hours and the stomach ache and the jet lag and the it's and you're just like. Just watch a fucking video.
It's torture.
It, you know, like all these parents, you're not going to. It's like, fuck, here's Barney. Shut the fuck up.
Imagine, if you will, that you had strategically had your children in such a way that that period of time actually gets elongated, right? So, like, instead of grouping your kids together so that, like, okay, I had, like, a six-year period of just absolute hell with no sleep, but you had elongated that period to, like, let's say over the course of, like, 10 or 12
years. Right.
That's what it's like having a child when one is seven. Like, when the kid turns six, it's like you – it's all of a sudden like, oh, my God, I have an extra – like 2 hours a day.
Right.
Like they're not chewing up the same. Like I don't have to wipe any asses.
Right.
I'm thirsty. Great. There's the refrigerator. Right. Go get a drink.
Damn.
We had about 15 minutes of that before my wife
what
came.
A
well,
tease.
I had the 5 years and then the new one.
Five years. Kids are 5 years apart?
Yeah.
Okay, so four and then the pregnancy.
Right. But, you know, it's two women, so. You know, we're both willing to do everything. I'm sort of the guy.
Well, what are you saying? That I don't, I'm not doing anything?
It's just, Sam, you're a guy.
That's true.
I mean,
he seems
a lot
like a
of guys.
Well-rounded.
Okay, I'm telling you right now.
You're in touch with your inner woman.
I mean,
check it. I am telling you that no matter how much guys.
She knows Hebrew? Did you say Sheket?
Oh, wait. She's trans. Okay. We can't. We
it's
have to,
fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Sheket. Yeah, my wife's Israeli. I'm learning. Well, I know what shut up means.
Anyway, I didn't say babakasha. I just said Sheket. Okay?
And I Sheketed.
But it's like the men, I know there's so many hands-on guys. Like when I see guys in like Target or, you know, hold with the baby Bjorn, like being, and I'm like, oh, you have a baby for 3 hours and you're right. gonna fucking.
If
you can
the Bjorn
tell.
Is a giveaway, that right. that's just a pose.
Right.
Like they're going out, they're probably trolling for girls.
Right.
That's why you wear right. a baby.
And if you have the E-Trade baby in your baby Bjorn, then it's really bad.
I remember ooh. That. You see, you're not letting go
yeah,
of
yeah.
I mean, no, because I mean, all that talk about paradigm shift and yeah. Super Bowl ads.
No, but like, I just said baby, so I thought of E-Trade, but. It's no. like, come on, you have to admit, your wife has it way worse.
My wife does have it way worse, although I will say in my defense, my wife is out of town for a couple of days.
Really?
For work. And so, like, you know, for instance, you know, I deal with my son waking up at 6 a.m. this morning, and he peed himself, and of course, and, you know, the whole kit and caboodle.
And no nanny?
No nanny, but... he goes to, you know, like a
daycare.
Preschool.
Yeah.
Not daycare. It's preschool. Right. That's the way we can convince ourselves that we're not bad parents.
My kids went to daycare at 3 months old.
Seriously?
Yeah. Oh, they went to Basic Trust. Eesh. It was fucking great. It's the right. greatest thing.
Well, I mean,
it was great.
I mean,
no. But I spent, I
there's
yeah.
been studies. But the
fuck you. You just heard him. He's sleeping right? all day. I'm very proud of
he
him.
He sleeps very well.
Because they put him on a sleeping schedule.
Here's the benefit
he's
about
got
having
people doing yeah. shit for him.
My son is like, it's like he's like a dog. Like my nice. Daughter, right. my daughter like had like a will from a very young age.
She's right. like a cat.
So you think.
No, like a.
Fox.
Like, no, like a, not just
coyote.
Like a.
Coyote.
Yeah, like she's like
God
a.
God damn it,
like
I win! What do
like
I get?
A lion, got like it. A lion.
Right.
Like it was vicious.
Right.
Vicious. I couldn't tell my daughter. It was no, she was upset about something. Forget it.
Right.
My son is like literally, if he, it doesn't matter what has happened.
Just give him a treat.
He could, no, you. He could lose like a toe in some type of accident. And all I have to, he's crying. All I have to say is like, is that a truck? And he's just like, right. what?
A truck?
I think I hear
yeah,
a truck.
The fire
outside.
Trucks are great.
I think I hear, no, any truck. And he's right. like, I think I heard a truck outside. Whoa, let's go to the window. And that's
like
it.
Jude. So he has ADD.
He's completely yeah. forgotten.
That's
completely
great.
Forgotten.
I like that.
Completely
like
forgotten
that.
About what
so
he's doing.
So where, is she in public school, Myla?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Which one? Oh, you don't have to say if you don't want.
Well, we went over to Brooklyn. She's in a Brooklyn public school.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
And
she switched in grade 3 because I went from the public school that we knew each other at.
You know, I have to say,
people are going
to
go back and get your kids.
I know. Where are the kids?
Record.
Where's Sam Cedar's kids? I'm a Republican. I am a true believer in public schools.
Oh, I am too. I mean, it's yeah, me too.
And so many. This is how bad it is. So Ben is 14. He's 6'4" now. He has a 16 shoe. He's like, I'm not kidding. He plays basketball 4 hours a day, practices 4 hours. He's going to play college ball. He's, like, amazing.
Wow.
And this school, this private school with an amazing team, I feel like I'm with a tremendous team. That's Donald Trump. Tremendous team.
Fantastic.
Everybody loves
him.
Them.
They just keep recruiting him. And he's like, I am not going to private school. I am not. And it's he's like, I will not go to private school.
Wow.
Which I love.
Yeah, I mean,
it would be good for his basketball career, but you know what? He fucking goes to school right by Times Square. And the school just moved from the Lincoln Center. Henry would go hang out at Lincoln Center after school. I went to fucking Quick Check in New Jersey.
Hmm.
We had friendlies.
I
in
like
Massachusetts.
Friendlies, yeah.
It was friendlies just like you go to Times Square.
Did you have the drive through like where you could go on the outside and just order from the outside? You know,
from Friendlies?
Yeah.
It was Worcester. Things were not right, that whatever. Sophisticated. It was just you.
But
to
Worcester
go
was a huge melting pot. Mm-hmm. That's how it started. It was not just one. There were Jews. There were Irish. There were.
It's not a huge population of Jews, and it's actually gotten smaller. I mean, you know, it's Worcester's. Worcester
I don't
was
know if
basic,
you noticed that what's the entire population of Jews got smaller in the 1940s.
I heard that. I'm saying
since I know,
I was
I'm kidding.
There,
go ahead.
Right. I don't know that the population of Worcester was impacted as much dramatically right. by the
World I know War that II. There were a lot of different people there because one of my students grew up there. Anyway,
okay. Nancy.
Your middle name is Lincoln.
Oh, wow. Someone mm-hmm. has done their research.
Mm-hmm. Don't look at my thing. Which, you know, you don't hear that a lot. I mean, I know one dad from the baseball team named Lincoln.
Lincoln.
Jew. Yeah. Hmm. But your middle name is the name of a Republican. He did free the slaves.
That's true.
Are you named after Abe?
No.
Any relation?
Bing, 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 bing. What do I get, Brian Patrick?
For asking a question?
I don't know.
Oh, okay, go. What,
did you? No, it was actually just like my dad's friend when he was like 20, you know, a childhood friend who had passed away.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, it's very sweet.
But you can say, you know. I mean, do you find it ironic that you went into politics, really, and your middle name is Lincoln? I mean, that is Beshert.
That's crazy. It's really crazy. I mean, it occurred to me Lincoln is also the name of Abraham Lincoln.
Yes.
It wasn't his middle name.
Right. I know. I'm just saying. Okay, so... You go to school. You went to high school.
I was named after Sam Gagenson, though, who was a congressman from Connecticut.
Is that true?
No.
You're an asshole.
No, he was not.
It was my great. All right. You were the director of your school's variety show in high school.
Awesome. Yes, that's right.
Yes.
I mean, I think technically the co-director. I don't want to
piss
anybody
off.
Yes, I
know. I did read co-director, but I wanted to say.
I think probably I did more than him.
Really?
The co-director,
and was the co-director a teacher, or was it
another
student?
No, it was the kid. It was Gary.
And then
Gary
you wrote to the city about a charter, or
like simultaneously, I also served on the Worcester Charter Commission as like their one employee.
Right.
Well, not their one employee. Their one underpaid employee. There was one other guy.
And how old were you?
I think I was senior in high school. Yeah, and we had. With actually the guy who was just the former mayor of Worcester, concurrently. I mean, at the time, we were high school buddies.
Oh, wow.
We submitted a charter proposal for when Worcester changed their charter, and it was ultimately something very similar was adopted.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I want to boast.
Were your parents like? Samuel wrote a charter with his friends.
No, they were.
And they're considering it.
No.
Were they not very supportive of you?
I mean, I think they were aware that I was doing it, but
you didn't have like your mother.
No, my parents
wasn't
were not
over.
Like that. No,
what were they like?
You know, arm's length.
Yeah,
I think we tried. I think everybody in our family tried to.
You don't know arm's length.
Oh no, the way he was kind of mentioning his parents before.
Right.
I think we all tried in the family to stay at arm's length from each other.
Mm.
I mean, I'm close with my sisters.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm closer with my parents now because you know they're grandparents.
Right. Were they involved in politics?
No. My dad, an attorney. My mom, a teacher. No. Although, I will say this. Apparently, the chairman of Massachusetts, Central Massachusetts for McGovern, lived down the street from us.
Wow.
And when McGovern came to Massachusetts, they needed a house with a big backyard.
So that was yours?
And so McGovern came to our house in 72.
No way!
And I remember I was like 6 or 7 at the time. And I remember Roger Mudd. Like that.
Oh, yes, Roger Mudd!
I remember Roger Mudd walking, because I'd seen him on TV.
Right.
And I remember him walking up, and there was a lot of like motorcycle cops around. And so like whenever my parents had people over after that, I had a speed racer helmet that I would wear.
Right.
With the Billy Club. Just to be the cop at the party.
But oh,
I remember like there
so
was a big.
Cute.
Yeah, McGovern.
Oh my God.
Governor.
Now, so what do you remember about McGovern?
Well, at the time, I remember that he was instrumental in '68 for sort of getting the unions out of the convention process, which ultimately, at the time when I was in '72, I projected that it would lead to a dissolution of union power in this country and lead to a 7%.
And you...
No, I don't know. At the time, I didn't know anything.
You know what I remember about McGovern?
You had a Billy Club.
I remember, and you know, we didn't talk a lot about politics, but the two things I remember. I remember walking home. I lived 5 houses down from our elementary school and went through 8th grade. And I remember walking home and, you know, my mother's from Manhattan. My father grew up in New Jersey, but like I instinctively knew my mother was a liberal, even though she's like, you know, there's certain things that women shouldn't do, like female rabbi, you know, then. But she as she got older, she got a little. But I remember walking home, and so I lived at the base of a hill, and then up the hill were all the Italians. Our neighborhood was all Italian and Jewish. And there were like, I think there were mob. I'm in New Jersey. There were a lot of mobby people, which no one cared. But I remember one of the rich houses, huh?
They should do a show about it.
Oh my God, that's such a great idea. Like the like a family and the guy's in the mob, but he has a regular family.
Yeah, I don't know if that would work. But.
All right. Anyway, it might work on like HBO or Showtime or something. All right. Anyway, so I remember walking home with one of the snotty kids. My parents were older and they were not into, you know, I came. Our house was a different, completely different household than all these like parents who were like in their 20s when they had their kids. And my parents were in their 40s. Anyway, so I remember walking home and one of the Snotty is like, oh, Nixon or something. And I was like, no, McGovern. I was like this. That was the first time I realized how different people really were, you know, and that these Republican meant something and Democratic meant and Independent meant something. And but then it wasn't like you didn't talk to. It's not like today. Where someone says to me, I'm going to vote for Trump or I'm going to vote for Cruz, and I go, don't talk to me. I don't want to talk to you.
I mean, I think
you.
Part of it is the age difference, right? I mean, at that time, I mean...
But now, I don't remember even through... Like, I couldn't stand Reagan. I couldn't stand Reagan because of AIDS. I really couldn't stand him. I didn't think he was smart. But the AIDS crisis, I had so many friends die or dying.
You were directly affected.
Right. And I just... It was
well,
awful.
He was horrible.
Yeah. She was horrible.
Yeah, and they're actors. I don't get it.
Did you hear my? Oh, I did my Nancy Reagan joke.
Did it bother you when Hillary Clinton said that about Nancy Reagan?
Oh my God! I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
That was a little disturbing.
That was unnecessary. Totally unnecessary.
She made a mistake. I mean, she did work for stem cell research, and Nancy was for stem cell research after Ronnie died, and there's George W. Bush sitting there at the funeral, and they put the camera on him when someone mentioned stem cell research.
Right,
they put the camera
right.
On him.
But
yeah.
No, just, you know, that to me just says, like, because, you know, I was in college at the time. I was vaguely aware that the administration was ignoring it. I was just getting out of college around that time that I had.
Right.
And it was vague awareness. And certainly by the mid-90s, though.
Oh.
Early 90s, I was like, you know, enough of a mature person and in touch with politics, you know, on that level to say like, hey, this was really problematic. Well, she was first lady of Arkansas in the early 90s.
Right.
She was the first, like when she came into office, it was, you know, one administration later. That to me was indicative of like, wow, wherever she's getting her
information
from is someone I don't want
on her
my
step.
President
right.
to be talking
right,
to
right,
and
right.
believing.
Right.
I mean, that was what was problematic to me. I mean, I've got problems with her, but that's not, I mean,
right.
you know.
So you then went to Connecticut College, which is a very good school.
It was a good school. I didn't really, you know, I wasn't. I think my cousin had gone there, and so
right.
I was like, okay, that's...
But it's a great school.
A great school.
And
wasn't
you,
as
made,
good,
you met John.
Oh, no, I knew John Benjamin, and I think we went to camp together at age 5.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, we went to junior high. We were enemies all through junior high, and then, you know, I mean, junior high enemies. We beat him and his friends up at bar mitzvahs. And then...
You would?
Well, not him, because he was... Too fast.
Yeah.
But you'd beat up his friends?
Well, yeah. I mean,
why would you? Well,
that's a badass. I'm just
clarifying.
Henry
him up,
does
it was like,
the beat
it was
up.
It's like,
thing.
You know, pushing around with each other. I mean,
you know, you
kick his ass. That's okay.
You know what? Now,
that's cool.
They arrange fights. So Ben is like, and they talk, Ben and Henry, who are both, I mean, very well educated. I'm going to be with Nick because they're having a fight at 3 o'clock at blank. And I'm like, how do you just have a fight? Like, you have to.
We've always arranged fights.
I know, but then they all go, and it's always like some tale of a knife or this or. And, you know, Ben is the most docile, like,
it's like
wouldn't
West Side
hit.
Story.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't hit, but they bring him because he's so big, but he won't touch anyone. You know, I don't know. It's ridiculous. Anyway, so.
But I was like 13. I mean, it wasn't like real fighting.
All right. So you go to Connecticut College, and then you went to law school.
I went to law school for
1 year.
Yeah.
And you quit.
Yeah.
Why?
I mean,
you quit and did stand up and started doing stand up.
That's so many lawyers.
And then
right?
Benjamin, I got Benjamin to
Northwestern. Then you went to Somerville and rented an apartment together.
That's right. Jeez, where did you get this? How do you do research?
I do research for everyone.
She's a witch.
Guests.
Pretty good.
A community means more than the street you live on or where your home is on a map. It's the relationships, not the location, that matter most. You may have noticed your community has changed. Old friends have moved away, you don't know any of your new neighbors, or you just don't feel quite as comfortable as you used to. The Good Samaritan Society can help. Our senior living communities offer more than a place to live. They offer a place where you can feel at home again. Housing options that fit your needs, a staff that genuinely cares, and neighbors you can call friends. Our mission is helping those we serve feel loved, valued, and at peace. Let us prove it to you so you can get back to enjoying your community and everything that comes with it.
To learn more about the Good Samaritan Society, call 855-GOOD-SAM or visit good-sam.com today. That's 855-GOOD-SAM or good-sam.com.
You know, my father is a lawyer.
My father was a lawyer.
His father, who I was named after, was a lawyer. Four of his brothers were lawyers.
Yeah.
Four in my father's generation were lawyers. It was Cedar and Cedar. And
of Beverly Hills?
Of Worcester. And
hi, Cedar and Cedar's office.
Exactly.
No, we don't sell trees. So long.
Ruth worked
there. Hi, Cedar and Cedar. No, we don't have any armoires. So long. Hi, sorry. Because I could do about 100.
Yeah, but the problem is that like people would look it up in the phone book.
Right.
And it wouldn't be under C. It's not spelled with
right.
C.
Right, it's spelled with a Seder and Seder. Right. No, we do not have any bitter herbs. Goodbye.
That's what I'm talking
Seder
about.
Seder and Seder. We've run out of matzah, you assholes. Shalom. You know, I had someone call from my synagogue today. I have to say.
To what, sell you matzah?
No, they want me to host this big gala, and I can't. And she's like.
You can't or you won't?
No, I can't. I actually can't. I do. You know, I'm very philanthropic. Too philanthropic. Anyway, so.
That's true.
So, but every time I get. You don't belong to a synagogue or anything,
I do.
Right? You do? Which one?
In
Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to do the... Were you bar mitzvahed?
I was, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
My daughter is going to be bat mitzvah. My wife is not Jewish.
But I know.
We're raising her Jewish. My daughter. She's not terribly psyched about it, but I was like...
She will be when she gets closer.
I mean, my daughter... My wife wanted to raise...
With a religion.
With a religion, and she really didn't have anyone that she was raised with. And right. I was like, well... You know, I mean,
I don't know if she's missing out that much, though.
Yeah. Okay.
Really?
Not your fucking area. Got it?
Totally.
Let me tell you something. Everyone I know, I'm not kidding, because Elisa wasn't bat mitzvahed because her parents were like, no, you don't have to. And so she asked her friends, how's Hebrew school? And they were like, it sucks. So she didn't come. Biggest regret. Her sister is now getting bat mitzvahed. It's a big right.
I would like to sit her down with Milo. Because Milo, of course, is like, I'm not learning anything.
Right. But Ben didn't want to either. But then when they do it, they're so like, wow, I fucking did that. It's really an amazing thing.
I think it's something that she could feel good about.
And they have a party.
And it's a party. We probably wouldn't do the party.
Yeah, we don't do a big party. She can go to Israel. Mm. No, but it really is an accomplishment. And you do learn another language and you feel part of a community.
Yeah.
And you learn these stories that help you, you know.
And I told her, I said, look, you know, there's only two things I'm going to make you do. I'm going to force you to take piano and I'm going to force you to go to school.
Does she like piano?
No. She doesn't like anything I make her do.
But
she's a good piano player.
I play piano.
She's a good piano player. I should have her sit and talk
to
you
guys. I'll play with her. Bring her over. I have a piano.
That would be
duets.
So fun. Okay. I want to record it.
No. So now I lost my train of thought.
You were talking about the temple.
Bar. Every time they call, I'm not kidding. It's 800. It's the same Jewy voice of, hi,
This is Deborah Steinstein, and I hope this finds you well. Everything is, I hope this finds you well.
There's a lot of Jews, I find, that work.
I know, but it's like, please. And everything's so like, please, I don't mean to bother you. Like, there's this whole thing passive in the voice. Like, you know, I hope that you'll be able to get back to me, and I hope you're well, and I hope, and I'm hoping for good news, and I'm hoping and hoping and hoping and hoping. It's like,
your temple, if I'm not mistaken, your temple is at the corner of Amsterdam and 1955.
Is that mine? Is at between Broadway and West End. Yes. I'm going to go with, maybe 1960.
Okay.
Hi, this is Deborah Steinbergstein. I hope this
like when you put
well.
That voice on, I imagine someone who has to take their earring off to put the phone
but
receiver
yes, but
to
you
their
know
ear.
What is amazing?
Like, it's like sort of these like muted colors.
But, you know, I talked to her today. Her name is actually Lisa Steinberg. But I talked to her today. And then I just start being me. And she was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm like, I know, it sucks. And I hate this fucking traveling. And then we were talking. And then I'm just like, fuck this. And she's like, like, completely becomes a normal person. Like, they're so Jewy in the Jewy area.
Well, you disarm
and
people.
They don't know who could be on the other line. They just call and they put that sort of, like, Jewy protective voice on.
Hi.
Like...
but she deals with all the fundraising. So we were right. talking about yeah. how people who are born or from wealthy families and born wealthy are so much more humble than nouveau riche.
Oh,
it is beyond. And my mother always used to tell me that, you know, you never know how much money anyone has. You never know. They could have the nicest car, the nicest house. They could be broke. And you cannot ever, ever, ever. And my mother came from a lot of, you know, she was very classy, which I took on, as you can see. But it's true. It's the new people. I see it with comics.
When they get a lot of money.
Yeah. It's like, you're not a fucking, sorry. Hmm. You're still, you know, sitting in the back of the Comedy Cellar or Catch trying to get on. So don't fucking, oh, big deal. Okay, I'm not going through names. Anyway, the point is...
I'm actually pretty curious now.
I'll tell you later.
Anyway, so you then start doing stand-up, but you joined... David Cross had a group called Cross Comedy.
That's correct.
And you... Now, what was it? Was it sketches?
It was sketches. And
but were you doing stand-up? Like, where did you start doing stand-up and why?
I mean, I guess when I was in law school, I mean, I always had sort of this dual track. I went to college as a theater major, and I was running. I was actually like, you know, as they did a program with Eugene O'Neill.
New London. It's in Connecticut, and
right,
it's new.
Connecticut.
Yeah. Cedar and Cedar.
So I was I had a job on Midsummer's Night's Dream to pull the rope for the elevator for the fairy queen to come out of the thing, right? Mm-hmm. And that was my job as part of like being a theater major.
Yeah. Right. You have to do backstage.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, and. But I had to go to a speech night because I was running for, you know, I think freshman class president.
Right.
And so I came to tell the director, I said, look, I can't be here Sunday night. The production was like 2 weeks away, 3 weeks away.
Right.
I can't be here Sunday night to pull the rope. And he goes, well, we'll find somebody else to do it. And I said, okay, you know, I'll be back Monday. And he goes, no, we're going to find somebody else to do it.
Oh, that is so typical.
I was like,
well, that's the way they are.
What are you talking about? I got to give the speech.
That's showbiz kid.
Well, if you're not committed to this. And I was like, okay.
That's what they, you know, it's all in college, especially, it's all about commitment.
Right.
You know, you're not showing me that you're like, I majored in piano. But then I was like, I'm not sitting in the practice room for 6 hours. These people are fucking miserable. I'll just be a general music major. I'll learn my pieces for my jury, and that's it. But the rest of them are in there hours and hours in this soundproof, tiny fucking...
I gotta say, I didn't particularly like the other acting like majors. It was always like, it was just like, you know, please pass the salt.
Oh,
it's like,
I know.
You know, just talking in a normal voice.
Right. Just
like
ask for the sugar.
Right. I don't need to hear, like, I don't know.
All right, so...
Edward Robinson asked for the...
Wait, mm-hmm. All right.
I'm with you.
Okay, but I wrote stuff and then I went back.
I felt the same
so,
way as
all right!
While you were looking for
but
your
I
notes...
But I know, but you're not... You have to go with the flow.
I'm...
Flow.
Yes,
we have an issue.
I was going to say, it's like being at home.
Right,
like,
because I'm trying to teach Lauren that that Lauren is supposed to challenge me or, you know, get on my nerves, but in a good way and go along with the conversation. Right. But instead, it's interjections.
It's interjections.
Yeah.
May I interject?
You have 30 seconds. Go.
While you were looking up your notes and not necessarily saying anything in particular at the time,
I understand thought what I would also.
I did.
What's
that?
I was just agreeing.
Thank you very much, Lauren.
Well, I think we're in agreement.
Lauren, you have to say he.
I was filling in the dead space.
So try to deal
space.
With that, okay?
But I got to say he.
He doesn't you
care.
Deal with so much.
Lauren has a female body but is a male.
It's a physical condition.
Yeah, won't transition.
Okay, won't transition.
So,
I might.
Okay. So, you do the David Cross comedy. Now, let me tell you
Cross
something.
Cross comedy, right.
Cross comedy. And I had already been doing stand-up, I remember, and a lot of New Yorkers would go to Boston
yes.
all the time to get
stage
time.
Met a lot of people who come up and they would like sort of like host the show, sort
yeah.
of like be like the stand-up, like 10 minutes,
right.
and then we would do the show.
Right. And you're working with Louis and Janine
yep.
and all the Boston comics. And I remember in the 80s when
but
I started.
But Louis and Janine had left at that point.
Right,
but
right.
Louis would come back. He
right.
would do some stuff.
But that we all knew they were from there.
Right.
Like Wendy Liebman was there too.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of really good Boston. Like we would go to Boston because we could make more money there on
it was
the
a
weekends.
Great comedy scene
yes.
at that time. Yeah.
And then during the week, we'd be in the city. And then the Boston comics would come to get seen in New York.
Right.
And so they both had great comedy
right.
scenes. And so you're in with this group. Now, I'm a little older. I had been doing stand-up, and I always felt like, oh, those are the cool guys. Though, I mean, that
yeah,
was,
are.
And.
That's true. That's true. I'm agreeing with you.
You're an asshole. Cedar and Cedar. No, I'm sorry. We do not have air freshness.
We've had to close up because Sam became a comedian.
Okay, so what happened, you know, I started
How did we get so
at 19.
Uncool?
No, but you were all so, well, this is not, you know, we're going to do sketches. And then it became Luna Lounge, like,
yeah.
we're not going to tell jokes, we're going to tell stories.
That's true.
And so many people, and I always was like, oh, I'd like to do that. But I was half accepted and
yeah.
half not accepted, and it was so annoying because
it was a real attitude. Okay, so
and let me tell you, when I shot my HBO special that week of specials, Janine, Marin, Kat, Jonathan Kat, like yeah. all these people, and they ended up, and I remember thinking, well, they're doing all their stuff in these sort of alternative clubs,
right.
but when HBO comes to see them, they have to do it at the Improv.
Right.
And so
that's
I was
tougher.
Like, right, and it's much tougher. And I was like, I can kill at the Improv. But and I know I can kill because my act is storytelling.
Right.
But no one would ever give me the fucking chance.
Well, we talked about this. All of us. No, that is not.
There was a meeting.
Seder and Seder.
I mean, that scene, there was something that was also happening in San Francisco at the same
right,
time.
Right, right.
And, I mean, I was a little bit younger than those guys. Like,
right.
you know, I Benjamin and I actually joined that cross comedy. I think we were the last two or
right.
three people. And it was like, I don't know, like 15 people.
Right.
And
Ben Stiller.
No, Ben Stiller was not
around. Was after?
No, Ben Stiller, like Cross left Boston to
go to
LA.
Ben Stiller. Right.
So like Janine would come through and Marin would come through and Louis would come through and they were, you know, like sort of like, you know, involved in it.
Right.
Almost peripherally, but closer than some.
Right.
And, you know, like people, like I think I met Attell at the backstage
right.
at, you know, Catch and. That's Black.
Yeah,
and,
those were. Yeah,
you know, and so there was that whole. I don't know if you want to call it comedy school. There was this like pushback to all the stand up, and part of it was like, you know, we were in Cambridge, and there were like Boston comics,
right.
Who were Boston comics,
right? The Nick DiPaolos,
the
yes.
DiPaolos, and the Steve Sweeneys,
right,
and. Chance
what's
Lincoln,
his name? Yeah.
Murphy.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm just now
yeah,
naming
yeah.
off Irish names. Fitzgerald.
O'Reilly.
But And, you know, guys at Ketch couldn't play at Knicks, really. You wouldn't.
I did.
Very rarely, though, you could go. And we were all sort of coming out of Ketch. And, I was, you know, barely opening at that point.
Right.
I'd go on, like, Route 1 occasionally.
Right,
but,
right,
you
right.
know, if I went and did something, even at the Chinese restaurant on Route 1, it would be like,
I love that
place. This fag going
at Kowloon's.
Yeah, exactly.
And let me tell you something. I, it's so interesting that you say that because
a massive restaurant.
I wanted to be able to conquer those rooms as a female, and I did. I mean, I really learned how to do it. But I also was at Catch, and I also wasn't. I wasn't telling regular jokes. You know, I was talking about my mother and talking about my life. And I so wanted to be a fucking accepted by, you know, that.
Well, I wasn't in charge of accepting.
Yeah,
people.
Well, fuck you. I mean, they respected me.
Yeah,
they
I think
did
so.
Respect
I think
that, me, that and I respected the them. And,
I was a fan of yours at that time.
I love you. And, I love you. All she wanted.
What we were doing was specifically, there was like a lot of, I think, like father hate involved in that group. Mm-hmm. And so it was very oriented towards like, you know, fuck the industry and fuck the norms. And it was deconstructive. And people were like, it was Andy Kaufman was the big sort of influence. And we would do stuff that would come out of the audience.
Right.
So like we would plant people in the audience.
Right.
And
right.
at Catch, you know, there was that was like only like
Catch was
to be in the audience at Catch was like. You're almost the audience. Like,
right.
There's no like, wow, what's going on over there? It's
right.
just like, holy shit, what's going on right here?
Right, right.
And we would do stuff like that. And it was, you know, it was all like, you know, there would be a 12 o'clock show and, you know, people would tackle you on
stage
and that type of stuff. And I think there was just, there was an attitude coming out of that room in particular that was just very anti-comedy. And then, and it was just, for me, it was just very lucky because the group sort of dissolved at one point. We tried to like cut down to 9. I think I was like number 10.
Right.
John Benjamin was reminding me this the other day. I think he voted against me, but
right.
that's not important.
We're not going to be bitter.
We're not going to be
Herbs.
Bitter about it. And to like compete for just for laughs or something like that. And then I think at one point there was talk of Saturday Night Live.
Right.
But the group sort of dissolved when Cross went to go do the Ben Stiller show. And then people came down to do Conan because,
right.
We started another group with Benjamin and I, and Laura Silverman was in it.
Right.
Mike Lee, I don't know if you remember that.
I remember Mike Lee.
He was a great joke writer. I mean, like almost like half the buttons
right.
you see in the street were like
right.
jokes he had written. Mm. But by the time what was happening at Largo in California, which was that sort of, which I had
with
never
Beth
been to.
Lapidus.
Right.
Yeah.
But they tried to do it at Rebar down
right.
here.
Yep.
And like in the first 2 weeks they were doing it, I had come down and I think I had met some guy from Comedy Central come up to scout our second group and
right.
he put us up and all the shit we were doing in Boston was perfect for that room.
Right.
Like this sort of sketch but not quite sketch.
Right, right, right.
And sort of just weird, not really funny enough
and
for a comedy room, but
kind of.
You were like the guy
going to follow
just
the
very
rule.
Conceptual
right, 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 right.
And I was, it was very lucky for me because out of there I got my first game. Oh, All American Girl.
That's what I was going to get to.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. So you,
it just occurred to me, of
right.
course. I forgot.
So I got, I remember this because I did my HBO special. And I was on All American Girl because first they were going to put me on one of those Ladies of the Night, Women of the Night things, and then they gave me a full special.
Right, where so, they compare female comedians to prostitutes.
Right, Women of the Night.
Of course.
So,
oh, of course.
But yes, so I was on. I was cast on All American Girl, but what episode were you on? I kind of remember. No,
you will recall that you were fired. At the
oh, end. You were at the end.
That's right.
That's right. So what happened was we had a full season and then they fired all of us. But you know who went on an audition and got another part for another show? Me. So I was like, oh, I'm booked. I got cast in this show, Blame It on Ernie, on UPN. It was about, I was a mail carrier. It was really funny. It was about these mail carriers.
Mm-hmm.
And
I never heard
and
of
Ernie was a mail carrier. And I was like, All American Girl was on ABC, which was a major broadcast network. Yes. And then you guys came in. They said, we're going to make it like Friends.
Yep.
And so you came in.
I was the hip nerd. Uh-huh. And it was Diedrich Bader.
I remember, yes.
And I think his name was Andy Lowry. And he was like a... And they kept Grandma. I can't remember.
What's her name? Amy Hill.
Yeah.
And she Amy was, Hill. Because she, you know, it was interesting because they did those Q thing, testing. Yeah, yeah. She came in first and I came in second.
Hmm.
And, but I, you know.
I mean,
but we I'm not were cool enough. But it was like another thing, like, oh, so those are her cool hip friends. And here we go again.
Right.
You know, I'm so not cool.
But that was an on-air pilot, which rarely happens.
Right.
Like where they do, like the 18th episode or the 22nd episode of the season was like, everybody apparently had died in some type of like horrible accident.
Oh, it's
and
like
the only person who lived was Grandma. And now all of a sudden, Margaret is living with three other people. And Mariska Hargitay was on that show.
Hargitay. It's Hargitay.
I just called her Mariska.
Okay.
And... I did a scene with Vicki Lawrence. And like,
oh, yeah.
But that whole thing, they had seen me at Largo.
Mm-hmm.
My girlfriend at the time had moved out to L.A. So I went out to L.A. because I was like, I got nothing.
Right.
I just moved down to New York.
Right.
And I think it was like, I moved to New York in October of 94. And I think like my girlfriend had moved out there in like January. And I went out there. And by February, I went out there.
Right.
My first audition was with that, I think it was Sandollar at the time.
Right.
That they had seen me. I booked it. I didn't have an agent. And it was, you know, it didn't occur to me like, this is just like booking a regional Dunkin' Donuts audition in Boston.
Right. Mm.
And I got it, got an agent, got the part. You know who auditioned? Was Jack Black.
And that's, you know what? He did an episode.
And he talked about that? No.
No, he not on this. He did an episode of All American Girl before that. And I remember because he was like, he kept saying, he kept telling Margaret, like, who's that girl? Like me. Everyone, a lot of people, I mean, everyone pretty much knew I was gay, except like guest stars would come on. And I remember, what's her name? Jodie Long, who played the mother. And we'd always be in makeup, me and Maddie Corman and Margaret. And we'd talk about Sharon, my, you know, oh, Sharon coming. She's my ex. And I remember, and we used, and Jody would always be like, who's Sharon? Who's, and we literally called her Who's Sharon. Like that, her name was Who's. Her name became Who's. But Jack Black was one of the, and he was like, who, and Margaret was like, sorry. But, because he likes tall women. But then, you know who else did an episode? Big director.
Tarantino. Of course,
Tarantino.
I knew that because Margaret was dating him at the time.
Right, Margaret.
I remember she
him.
Was on the phone with him all the time. Like he kept me up last night. You know, would you come in or something?
And we, we all went out to dinner, and then we all decided one day on the set that the director was this older gentleman who was, you know, a network director. You know how they are. They're just like.
I remember that episode because I watched it after I got the show. I had never seen the show.
So,
and they drew, I just remember like he drew like a square.
Right.
And I just remember going like, oh shit, what the fuck is this show?
Right.
I had no idea what it was.
Well,
I just knew they were going to pay me a lot of money.
Yeah. And so, so the director, we all came in early because Quentin had just done whatchamacallit. And, you know,
not
the
Reservoir
movie.
Dogs.
No,
the
movie.
Right.
This is me. This is,
right.
You know, the movie.
With
the people, with this,
Pulp
with
Fiction.
What's Pulp Fiction. And so we all decided to get there
was
early.
Was that your sign for vagina?
Yeah. Awesome. We all decided to get there early before the director. And we were going to be sitting around making believe Quentin was directing the episode. So we all sat, and then the director walked in and we were like, okay, how should I do my line? And he was like.
He didn't get it.
I mean, he was laughing, but you knew he was like, anyway, but you did that next phase.
I did that. And then, of course, it went away.
And then it didn't go.
But that's basically how I totally stumbled into it.
Right.
And then from there, I did like, I don't know, literally.
Well, you did Beat Cops.
I did this show called The Show.
Right.
After that, Paul Giamatti was in the pilot. I did Boys and Girls, Girls and Boys. I mean, there was like, I just, you know, did there, series of after like on
well,
call,
once you got, like, once you got Guy past the Island, network, then you could get
yeah,
anywhere.
Once you do it once.
Right.
Like, you just become
they're
a safe choice.
You're part of the... But the thing is, now, awesome. It's not like it was. No. It's not like where you could get on stage and some casting person or a network executive's in the audience and goes, I want that guy. It well, doesn't happen like that
no,
anymore.
But I mean, that was... I mean, I auditioned, but you have to remember, like, at that time, Thursday night, the biggest night of television,
right.
was Jonathan Silverman,
right.
Jerry Seinfeld,
right.
David Schwimmer, Paul Reiser,
right.
some other Jew...
With,
who looked
you know,
basically
like you.
Yeah. Not quite too Jewy.
Right.
But, you know.
But was handsome.
I would go in.
Even the guy on 30-something.
Every
yeah.
single writer at that time was basically how I projected I would look like
right.
when I was their age.
Right.
You know, like a little fatter, yeah. balding a little bit. And that was basically.
Right.
So I got a lot of gigs.
So you wrote the movie Who's the Caboose?
Right.
Which starred Sarah Silverman.
That's right.
And you dated.
Yes.
Which...
I mean, that was basically like when I had come out to L.A., it was to move out with her.
Right.
And that was sort of like
So
my...
she was your girlfriend that moved
yes,
to L.A.?
Yes, at that time,
gotcha.
Yes. And it was sort of, you know, not quite... autobiographical, but it was sort of based
right,
on the whole experience.
And it would, then that became pilot season.
And then
yeah,
nothing happened. We shot it on Digivideo and converted to film, and it went nowhere. Nobody knew who like Sarah
right.
was or Cross or Andy
right.
Dick or any. And 6 or 7 years later, Trio
yes.
bought it
hmm.
and then commissioned 6 more episodes
right.
of like a sequel.
Wow.
So we shot that. And then... almost the day that we were to deliver, it was announced that Trio had been bought and was going to close down.
Oh, months. God. That's what happened to my Blame It On Ernie.
That's what
UPN
happened to all
did
the
fucking
shit.
Fuck
I've
shit.
Done. Everything I've done is like.
Okay. And then, okay, so that goes on your TV career, blah, 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 blah. And then, and we did Beat Cops.
We did Beat Cops, and I did Beat Cops twice, actually. One was after I had done all these sitcom deals.
Mm-hmm.
And David Kissinger worked for Studios USA.
I
at the time.
Remember Henry's
yeah.
son.
Yeah, exactly. Which was also very.
I
weird.
Know.
And
but
he was
office.
A very nice guy. But it was very strange.
I do not like the way you're saying your lines.
He did once say to me, he said we were because like he commissioned Beat Cops,
right.
which had not been done before because this was right after the Sin Fin rules, and
mm-hmm.
so this was an independent studio, and I think they knew they had to come up with a new model. So he just gave me a chunk of money, and I said, I'll deliver it for you.
They used to do that. Now
and,
they don't, yeah.
And he only got one chance at the script, and I remember him saying, like, he phrased it in such a weird way, like, I want to register my deepest concerns over the way that Stan reacts in this scene. And it
no
was,
way.
I just felt like, wow, this
I've
is like...
gone to
he, yeah, it was completely sort of like... diplomat speak.
Right.
It was very strange.
That's probably how his father was in that.
I presume. Like,
I
yes.
want
oh.
to relay
stress.
My concern
right.
about the fact that
oh
you
God.
Want to go into the business of show.
Right. Well, I think he actually probably, Henry probably enjoyed that
right.
part of it.
All right.
But,
so then we fast forward
right.
to radio.
Right.
Okay. And we get... You, there's, I remember Air America.
Yeah.
I loved Air America. It was finally, because, you know, it was always like, you know, everyone's like left wing.
It was built because there was no left-leaning
right.
media.
And, right. And mm-hmm. there still really isn't. I mean, there is.
Sort of come full circle.
Right.
In a way.
And mm-hmm. yet it was constantly about the left, you know. And so I loved this. And it had Rachel. I remember Rachel. I used to do her show.
Yeah.
And you and Janine.
Marin. Al Franken.
Yep. And you and Janine had a show, but she actually had a show and asked for you.
I was out doing pilot season and directing Gary Busey, and she
right.
called me. And we had talked about this before because in 2003, I had done a version of this show on Tom Sharpling's
right.
show.
Right.
Just because, you know, we did this like fake, you know, political talk
right.
show. And wasn't fake, but it was, you know, part of his show. And
right.
she called me and she's like, some people have approached me to do this and I want to do it with you. And I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Right.
And so we just did it. In fact, 12 years almost to the day.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, we're recording this on the 29th or 30th?
Right, 30th, yeah.
Okay, tomorrow.
It was the first 12 years
we launched on March 31st, 2004.
Wow.
And Janine and I had never done radio before. And right. I think it was really apparent.
Right.
Particularly with me.
Yeah, but...
And we were on, all of a sudden, like, I've never done radio before.
Right.
Now I'm on in New York, LA,
right.
Chicago, 40 stations and whatnot. And
you think it was apparent?
Oh, sweet. Why? Lord. Because
my sweet Lord,
I used to say it was like
Seder and Seder.
It was basically the way I would pitch it was like it's like college radio meets college radio.
Right.
Huh. It was just did not sound like we were professional. And
right.
we weren't. Like Janine and I would argue. She would criticize what I was doing on air constantly.
I think that's part of what people liked about it.
I think that was actually probably what people enjoyed.
You guys got in a fight over.
Constantly.
But about the Scientology. thing. The media
Wikipedia
does.
Says that. We got in a fight about
everything.
And part of it was like we were just annoyed with each other mm-hmm. on air, and part of it was like, let's just keep being annoyed with each
right.
other because it's dynamic.
Right.
That Scientology thing, I think, was a little bit overblown.
Right.
I mean, it wasn't, I think we just had a disagreement about something, and we were just sort of channeling other
right.
general. And I think, you know, for me, I think I liked the stability of doing a show every day. And I think it was harder.
Oh, it's the best.
Well, I think it was harder for her.
Right, because she was acting. Can you tell them to shut the fuck up?
Yeah. What
it's
is
like
going
so
on?
Annoying.
This is like supposed to be a professional. You got all these like, trappings in here.
I know.
It really
and
turns
yet
out
they
to be
don't
like
shut
a locker
the
room.
Fuck up. Okay. So you're on. She decides to leave, and they give you.
I stayed on with that show,
yeah.
and then I did the morning show 9 to noon.
Right.
But meanwhile, over the course of 6 years, there were six different owners.
Right.
And six different CEOs.
Right.
Or five owners and five, and so you know, there's nothing can work in that way. I mean,
right.
Janine and I were reading Savage. Laura Ingraham
right.
and Mark Levin at the time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Much bigger signals, too.
Right.
And so it was never a ratings issue. It was just, we had just abysmal fucking management.
Right.
Abysmal.
Right. So then they give your spot to Lionel, and he
right.
loses all your listeners.
That's correct.
And then you decide.
I know. I did a Sunday show.
Right. They gave you once a week the Sam
yeah.
Cedar show.
Yeah.
Cedar of Beverly Hills.
Marin, who had also been fired.
Right.
We started doing like these Marin versus
right.
Cedar hours,
mm-hmm.
which some technology that some dude in Boston had
right.
figured out and nobody else had and we
right,
were doing.
Right.
And then they offered Marin a show with the last round of thing.
Right.
The last guy to come in. And I think he just wanted someone else to be in this clusterfuck with him.
Right.
And so I came back down to New York. I was living upstate.
Mm-hmm.
And we did.
Where were you living?
Up near Hudson.
Why?
Basically, you know, I had bought a house up there years before. And I it was the writer's strike.
Right.
I had gone back in and I had like a deal to do a show with CBS. And I was like literally had gone out the week before and would.
Mm.
Had pitched
that
it,
was
we were going to shoot it, and so the writer's strike came, and I had no...
That was unbelievable,
I have
that
no skill set.
Yeah.
I have no ability to make money. Like, you
right.
know, like, wait, I'm not on radio,
right.
and I'm not...
Well, you
could have
done stand-up.
No, I wasn't a stand-up anymore.
You never did...
Not really.
Right.
I mean, I had done it, but not... I wasn't
right.
a real stand-up. I mean, I just alienated people on
right.
stage, and that's the way... It was funny for me to do.
So, in 2000... At the Republican National Convention here in
2004.
Oh, 2000. Oh, no, that's I didn't mean that. I meant in 2000 when George Bush stole the presidency and the Supreme Court granted him his wish to
right.
fuck up this country.
Correct. Mm.
That was a major turning point in your life.
I had always been very political, but during that period, I took like this is before digital cameras. I took like a thousand. I just stayed at home. You know, I was an actor.
Right.
And so I was like, I made all my money in like 3 weeks in February.
Right.
And so I was sitting in my apartment just taking photos of every day of the like the hanging Chad shit. And I just couldn't believe.
I could. When you even when you look at it now with that one guy looking at.
Yep.
We're in the fucking United States of America. We put people on the moon, and this is what he fucking lost.
Yeah.
He fucking lost.
And I, you know, I had been raised by lawyers where the law, like this whole attitude of the law is like above this shit.
Right, right, right.
And the Supreme Court ruling was so egregious in my mind. Like it just, it really. I just it was very problematic.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I wrote this movie about it, which turned out to be sort of a little bit, it was, I had this idea and I turned it into, I had done this character, Arthur Lieberman.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that night I was on the phone with Sharpling.
Arthur Lieberman's office.
Joe Lieberman's son.
Right.
But it was a fiction. I didn't even know if he had a son at the time. And it turned into a movie about Joe Lieberman's son pissed about the election. Gets inculcated by some radical Jewish Orthodox postal workers to commit a terrorist attack.
Because, you know, the Jews are great at delivering.
These guys were mail. Like, you know, like, and they had got me a bazooka from the, like the Haganah or the Irgun.
Right.
I can't remember what it was. And that had been sitting in somebody's apartment for like 65 years.
Hmm.
And my character takes that up into the roof of his building, his co-op building. And fires at another building. And we're shooting this in the summer of 2000.
Mm-hmm.
I got financial backing from the people who had done Requiem for a Dream.
Right.
Nice. They'd seen Caboose, but I said, like, look, if I'd show you the script to Caboose, you wouldn't give me a dime.
Right.
So I'm not going to show you the script to this.
Right.
I was only asking for, like, I don't know, like $7,500 from them. And I put in, like, half of my own money from, like, I don't know, doing According to Jim or something like that.
Right.
And we were 8 weeks into editing, and the planes hit the towers, and, like, the whole movie was not funny anymore.
Thanks for listening to part one of Sam Seder on Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. Join us in the next episode for part two with Sam Seder, Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. Thanks for liking us on iTunes, Facebook, facebook.com/killmenowcast. Follow Judy on Twitter at @JEWDYGold. Throw us a 5-star rating up on iTunes, subscribe, resubscribe, tell your friends about it. Love you all. See you next time.
And everything was wonderful. I'll see you soon. Thank you for the visit. So long.